Blog Talk Radio.
I'm riding around, and we are getting it, as the song would so say. What's going on, everybody? This is another episode of Inside the Octagon. I'm your host, Kalani. I got Leo and David with me as usual. Fellas, what's going on?
What's happening, fellas?
What's going
glad
on,
to be here.
Guys? Yep, good to be here.
Man, it's the middle of the week. It's hump day. It's close to the weekend, but not quite. It's kind of right there in the middle. And for everybody listening out there, just real quick, starting this coming Monday, you can catch Inside the Octagon on Mondays now. We're going back to Mondays, you know, with scheduling and conflicts and everything like that and our lives going on. We're going to be doing a show on Monday, so be sure to start your week off by listening to Inside the Octagon right here on blogtalkradio.com. Fellas, this coming weekend, we have UFC Fight Night taking place at Scott Trade Center in St. Louis, Missouri. Ironically, the main event is not featured Tyron Woodley, the welterweight champion from St. Louis. He just had a shoulder surgery, so he's out. But we do got a nice one. Featherweight bout between Jeremy Stephens and Dohoy Choi, a.k.a. the Korean Superboy. David, what do you think of this matchup right here?
Oh, I think it's great. I think, it's been over a year since the Korean Superboys fought, and boy, what a wild fight that was with Cub Swanson. One of my favorite fights in recent memory. And, you know, he had so much hype around him going into that fight. I sort of felt like he was indestructible, like there was no way he could get he could lose with all that hype. I mean, I felt like if he lost against Cub Swanson, it'd be so disappointing, but it wasn't. I thought it was a great performance regardless of the loss. I thought it was – and I hope for something similar against Little Heathen Stevens.
Leo,
yeah, so,
go ahead.
Man, this is one of my favorite prospects going on right now. It's Dohoy Choi, and same as David, I was completely on the bandwagon. I was completely thinking that he was going to run through Cub Swanson and really cement his place in the UFC featherweight division. Unfortunately for him, that didn't happen, but it was a really fun fight to watch, and I think maybe that year-long layoff for him, it might have been a little bit good, because I think fans are kind of starving to see him back again. And man, what a hell of a fight for him to come back against another hard hitting guy like Jeremy Stephens. And you know, both of these guys can certainly make a case for themselves to really cement themselves in the top of the division. So I'm really excited for this, and I think we're gonna have to enjoy Dohoy Choi while we have him, because where it is that. Now, pretty soon he's going to have to do military service for the Korean army. So we may not have him for a couple of years, same as a Korean Zombie. But while we do have him, might as well enjoy him.
No, enjoy him indeed. And yes, the South Korean army does have the mandatory 2 years sentence that you have to serve. As Leo just pointed out, with Korean Zombie, he's just now starting to get back into the transition of being a full-time MMA fighter. So, you know, the Korean Wonder Boy, certainly somebody who's been fun to watch, definitely somebody on the rise as far as a young prospect that has dynamite talent. And you can take on Jeremy Stephens, who, if you ask him, he's the hardest hitter in the division. If you ask Conor McGregor, who the fuck is that guy? Yeah, that Jeremy Stephens. This is a particularly very interesting matchup because Ho Choi is a rising prospect who has – uber amount of talent and just endless ceiling, whereas Stevens is a very tough, grindy, wily veteran, kind of like what Cub Swanson was when he fought Dohoy Choi. Now, they gave us a Fight of the Year candidate. In fact, I think it won it in some people's polls, but it also kind of muffed Dohoy Choi's climb to the top. David, I want to ask you this. Given given a prospect of what he could become, given his youth, and his skill set, and the fact that, you know, he's another star that you can make for the Korean market. Is it wise for UFC to put him in against tough veterans, or should not gimme fights, but they should give him lesser opponents that don't have as much experience as a Cub Swanson or Jeremy Stephens?
No, no, I think the UFC is doing absolutely the right thing, putting him up against these big names, because I feel like when he fought Cub Swanson, I felt like that was such a performance, even though he lost. I felt like it was still a tremendous performance by him, and he displayed a lot of heart. And I think he deserves these big fights. And as Leo was saying, he might have to serve in the military. I think I read somewhere he wants to fight as many times as he can before he has to do that mandatory service. So I like what the UFC is doing here. I want to see Duho Choi get in these big fights, sort of be under the spotlight as long as he can, because I feel like they could make him a very marketable star, especially on these cable cards. I mean, he had so much hype going into him back in 2016, and he certainly didn't disappoint me against Cub Swanson, even though he lost. I think we got a pretty good idea. This guy's an exciting fighter, and I think that's just what the UFC wants. And to put him up against another exciting fighter in Jeremy Stephens, I think the UFC is absolutely doing the right thing, and I hope they keep doing the right thing in terms of Duho Choi's career.
Yeah, myself, normally I think I would be on the opposite side of this argument. I don't like it when the UFC just kind of pushes these guys so fast that, you know, all of a sudden they're stuck in a position where they have to put him up in a title shot against a guy like a Max Holloway, which I don't necessarily think that Duho Choi is ready for that kind of competition. But in this case, because we do have Duho Choi for a limited amount of time and he is going to be gone for upwards of 2 years, I think this is perfectly fine to put him up against these, you know, these veterans, where it gives Duho Choi a chance to really make a name for himself, and it gives him a chance to basically put his name out there for the fans to enjoy and watch him. And then when he does come back in 2 years, there's going to be that much more excitement to see him return, much like was the case for Korean Zombie. So he developed a very rabid fan base before joining the military, and then he comes back 2 years later to fans who are just salivating to see him come back, and he came back triumphantly. So I think in this case, I'm not necessarily opposed to the UFC kind of fast-tracking him to these top guys in the division.
It is going to be interesting to see how Duho Choi comes back from his service, if he's able to replicate what Korean Zombie was able to do, or if being away for that long maybe kind of stifles his growth as a fighter. Only time will tell. Real quick, I want to jump off the card real quick, because this is a featherweight bout, and both of these guys are looking to climb the ranks to get a title shot. We were just told not that long ago that a title shot in this division is set, that Max Holloway, the reigning champion, is going to defend his title in March at UFC 222 against an original opponent who had to pull out of a fight recently with them. It's Frankie Edgar. Edgar, the former lightweight champion, now getting what I believe his third crack at the featherweight gold. What do you guys make of this matchup finally taking place? Hopefully nothing happens with either fighter having to pull out. David, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, so when Frankie Edgar initially pulled out of the fight, I was a little disappointed. But when they replaced him with Jose Aldo, I was very much excited. I love seeing Aldo fight, and I was excited to see if he could get back in there, sort of be the Aldo of old, or at least do what he did against Frankie Edgar a couple summers ago. That wasn't the case, obviously, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you have to go to Frankie Edgar because, I mean, Frankie Edgar's coming off that win against Yair Rodriguez. I thought a very impressive victory, too, with all the hype surrounding Yair 7 or 8 months ago, whenever that fight was. So I think this obviously they have to make this fight happen, and hopefully Frankie Edgar stays healthy. I know Dana White was sort of questioning his injury when he had to pull out of the first Max Holloway fight. Hopefully he could stay healthy and make it to Vegas in about 8 weeks. And I think stylistically it's a great matchup. I think for Max Holloway, he is a -300 favorite in the fight, and I think for good reason. Frankie Edgar has looked impressive in his last couple fights since he lost to Aldo, but I think Max Holloway is the real deal, and I don't really see anyone in the featherweight division being able to sort of climb that tall mountain of beating Max Holloway. And I feel like the fact that it's here in Vegas, the ninth island, I mean, you guys know how many Hawaiians are walking around Fremont on any given day, and they're going to find their way to T-Mobile Arena come March, and he's going to have a huge home audience. I believe probably the biggest home crowd that since maybe Connor, when he fought here a couple years ago, and T-Mobile was all Ireland, basically. So I think Max Holloway is going to have a pretty good home crowd, and I think that's going to be very beneficial to him. So, yeah, I think obviously this was the fight to make, but I feel like Frankie just doesn't have the answer this time.
Yeah, I certainly love the matchmaking here. We finally get to see Max Holloway defend the title against someone new. I was happy to see him, you know, dominate Jose Aldo for a second time. I think that really cemented his place at the top of the division. But at the same time, we get to see a fresh matchup and a fight that was being built up for, you know, several months until Frankie had to pull out. And I'm fully confident that Frankie's going to make it to the octagon this time. He's not really a guy that tends to pull out very often. You know, it's just it was just bad fortune that it had to happen this time around. But I'm certainly happy to see that this fight this time around. And as David said, I'm really glad it's in Vegas. I mean, that's the second best place you can put Max Holloway besides Hawaii. So why not basically give him a home crowd here in Vegas as, you know, for the first time as a champion. So I'm really happy to see that. And man, Frankie Edgar, that would be a huge feather in Max Holloway's cap if Max can pull off the victory, because Frankie Edgar is one of those perennial guys who just lingers at the top of the division for years and years and years to come. And he hasn't necessarily earned a title since losing the lightweight title back in the day, but this is a guy that just sticks around for the longest time, like a Uriah Faber. And man, they put him up against a younger guy, seeing if, you know, his days are past him, but he proves once and again that he's still one of those top contenders. And I think this is the number one fight in the featherweight division.
This certainly is the number one fight in the featherweight division. Now that Holloway has beaten Aldo twice, we've seen what Frankie Edgar versus Aldo has looked like on two separate occasions. You know, to me, I do feel that it's the Uriah Faber effect, where you know, as good as he is, he just hasn't been able to beat those guys that are right at the top. He beats basically everyone else in the division, but just those one or two guys right at the crisp top, it's very hard for him to get past those. If he loses this, I definitely feel that he needs to reevaluate where he wants to continue going on. Now, he is 35, 36. Maybe, I don't know, you know, I don't know if he's old enough, maybe he consider finally dropping down to bantamweight and trying to run at 135. But you got those killers like Cody Garbrandt, TJ Dillashaw in there, but I certainly would love to see Dominick Cruz and Frankie Edgar do battle. I seriously doubt what that 155 now that he will go back to lightweight. But if he loses this one, it'll be his third crack at the title that he loses. I definitely do not see him ever get another shot at the featherweight goal. But Frankie Edgar is as tough as they come. He's as game as they come, and he's going to come in there prepared. And like he said, he feels like this all has lined up to be fate. All he has to do is go out there and execute. And as David was pointing out, this is the ninth island here, and they are trying to build Max Holloway up, and he's doing everything on his part to make sure, hey, UFC Hawaii, blessed era, I'm the new king here with the suits, the ties, the way of fighting. One of the best fighters to look at today, not just inside the ring, but also outside. I would definitely love it if they will put both of these guys on a short media circuit, get them on some ESPN shows, get them on some Fox Sports shows, really build this up, because with one, you do have a future Hall of Famer in Edgar, but you also have a potential superstar in Max Holloway. You want fans to know about this matchup so that they can see a possible passing of the torch, so to speak. Going back, now that's one fight that's announced. Going back to the UFC Fight Night here, and David, I'll whip this over to you. In the co-main event, a middleweight clash between Uriah Hall and Vitor Belfort. Say what you will about both fighters with their inconsistency, but these are two of the most dynamic knockout artists in the division. What do you make up of Hall, Belfort? I believe this is Vitor's last fight on his UFC contract. he doesn't sound like he's ready to hang up the gloves just yet. We'll see after this match goes down. What do you make of the main event?
Yeah, I was under the impression that Vitor was going to retire after this fight, and I'm still sort of under that impression. I think this might be the last time we see Vitor in the octagon, and I love to see a retirement fight go out on a win. I don't want to see Vitor lose. He's had such an illustrious career, and I feel like Uriah Hall, even though he's very inconsistent, and we know how dangerous Uriah Hall is. I think we all saw that Gegard Mousasi fight a couple years ago. We know that Uriah Hall can be explosive at times, and Vitor has to be aware of that. But I love the story of, you know, a guy gets to sort of announce his retirement, as Vitor was kind of alluding to last year, and go out on a W. And I think Uriah Hall is the type of guy that if you are able to pull off the victory, I think it's tremendous. It's a tremendous way to end your career. And as much as Vitor has been a controversial figure through all the TRT and all that, I still feel like he's got a little something left in him for this fight come Sunday night. Now, I'm not saying Uriah Hall is going to be a cakewalk because, again, we know how explosive he can be, but we also know how explosive Vitor can be. And I'm really looking forward to this matchup, and I think it would be very – I feel like Vitor needs to win this more so than Uriah, especially with the contract expiring. If you want – to renew, if you want to get a new contract, or if you're going to negotiate with other organizations, I think a win would be tremendous for Vitor. So both of these guys have a lot on the line on Sunday, and I'm expecting a tremendous showing from both of these guys.
Well, I'll have to agree when you say that a victory for Vitor Belfort would certainly be a really big bargaining chip for him, especially going into a contract situation where I think last year he was already saying that, you know, his last fight on his contract was happening in Brazil against Nate Marquardt, and that ended up not being the case. But that tells me that he's already basically got one foot out the door, but not necessarily into retirement. I think he really does want to sign with someone like Bellator, or at least maybe get the UFC to pay him a little bit more money to, you know, keep fighting a couple more fights. But in my opinion, I think Vitor Belfort would do fantastic in Bellator with, you know, all these guys like Chael Sonnen, Vanderlei Silva, if we ever get to see him, Rampage Jackson, all these guys that are basically these older veterans from, you know, former UFC and Pride Glory, I think Vitor Belfort would be a perfect fit for them right there. So in my opinion, that's basically what Vitor Belfort is aiming to do after his UFC career. But, man, if you put him up against Uriah Hall, I think this is a very bad matchup for Vitor Belfort. And I know that, you know, Uriah Hall is kind of that inconsistent guy, but when he has it, he absolutely has it. And he's a very dangerous guy. He can knock you out with, you know, some really crazy flying knees or back kicks or anything he can throw at you, he can really knock you out. And I think that's just a very, very unfortunate matchmaking for Vitor Belfort. I really don't think he should have taken a match like that. In my opinion, maybe he should be fighting a guy like a Rashad Evans or someone who's basically on his hind legs, as Vitor Belfort is, where Uriah Hall is still kind of trying to rescue some kind of contention in his career. And I think that's a dangerous guy to match up against when you're basically on your way out. But I am looking forward to it. I do hope Vitor can muster up a victory, and hopefully that'll give him a nice bargaining chip heading into free agency.
Hey, anyway, guys, sorry I got to leave early, but I'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks for having me on, Kalani.
Hey, as always, David, thanks for coming on, man. Look forward to talking to you next time. Peace.
Yeah, no problem. Bye, guys.
All right, Leo, and then there were two. I completely agree with what you guys both said. You both brought up excellent points. With Uriah Hall, real quick. This is a guy who, before he got into the UFC via the Ultimate Fighter, he was 7-2. You know, he had a noticeable fight against he had a noticeable fight against Chris Weidman and Costa Filippo, two UFC veterans. Although he lost both, people also saw that, hey, he has some knockouts on there. He had a submission. This guy looked real, really explosive and good. And then he gave us one of the most exciting knockouts in Ultimate Fighter history with the spin heel kick. And from there, it seemed like that was part of his demise, so to speak. It became more so of everyone expecting this highlight reel knockout from him every time. And, you know, just from watching his body language in the ring and how he fought, it's almost like he tried too much to be like Anderson Silva. And look, I'm not going to knock anybody for going out there trying to mimic one of the greatest of all time, or trying to just, you know, be a little different with their fighting style so that it makes it more difficult for their opponents. But you talk about someone who hasn't been consistent. This is a guy who's 6-6 in the UFC. He's 1-3 in his last four. His last win came in September. So he's certainly looking to get himself a big, big win against one of the best fighters we've ever seen go into the cage. And Vitor, obviously, you know, the quote-unquote godfather of the TRT era. But, you know, this is a guy who for 20 years has been going at it. And, you know, 26-13, 18 knockouts, most knockouts in UFC history, most first-round knockouts in UFC history, some of the fastest hands we've ever seen when he decides to unload and be explosive with you. This is a guy who, whether it's TRT or not, whether it's at light heavyweight or whether it's at middleweight, Vitor just loves the fight and the competition. He's another one that's been a bit inconsistent, especially with USADA being in there. But, you know, this is one of the matchups, Leo, that I've told you before. I don't really like when the UFC puts a fighter that's on the way about to retire against somebody who either has a skill set of doing some serious damage or against a young prospect. I get the idea that, you know, you're passing the torch, you build up another one. But in a way, you also don't want to see somebody who for 20 years has helped your organization grow. You don't want to see them go in there and potentially get knocked out or TKO'd. That is the risk you take. But I would rather it would have been against somebody more historic, somebody that had a little bit more of a wow factor as far as, someone like a Shogun. I know Anderson Silva's in trouble right now, but I would have really liked if it would have been a more historic opponent for Vitor, if indeed this is his last fight in the UFC. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely agree. I think this is really not good matchmaking for Vitor Belfort. I really can't believe he took the matchup. And, you know, in a random place like St. Louis, Missouri, I really don't want to see Vitor Belfort retire I don't want to shit on the card because I think it's a pretty decent card, but that's not really a place for a legend like Vitor Belfort to kind of call it quits in the UFC if this is his last fight in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So I don't like the matchup, and I don't necessarily like the geography of where they put him in this matchup. If anything, I don't know that it's necessarily sour grapes or ill will by the UFC, but I'm wondering if they're trying to send Vitor Belfort a message where if you get beaten badly by this young guy, maybe a career in fighting is not necessarily in your future. So maybe that they don't want to see him go to Bellator, or if he loses, maybe they can just try to re-sign him for a cheaper price. So I don't necessarily think that this is in Vitor's best interest to accept the fight against Uriah Hall, because I don't know that it necessarily does him any good. But if he were to fight a legendary guy, as you said, like a Shogun Hua or maybe an Anderson Silva, that's something that, you know, fans from basically any generation can enjoy and tune in. And it's not as dangerous as losing to a guy like Uriah Hall, who can really knock your head off with a single punch.
Not certainly. And again, I do understand that, you know, maybe the UFC did try to offer somebody. Like I said, Anderson Silva does have the issue with USADA right now, so he's out the question. Shogun is at light heavyweight, and Vitor is at middleweight. So I do understand not everything could line up. I'm just saying I would have definitely liked somebody else just with a little more history behind their name. But if this is Vitor's last fight in the UFC, and I like what you were bringing up earlier, would he still consider fighting, but maybe not in the UFC? Would he go to Bellator? Would he go to Ryzen? Whether you want to jump to conclusions and say, hey, if you go over there, you might be able to start taking some of these Mexican or Brazilian supplements you was taking back before. And just like Alistair Overeem, we will see the phenomenal Vitor Belfort, where when he does the bouncing inside the cage, not too much flabbing, jumping up and down, if you know what I mean. But if he goes to Bellator, you got Vanderlei Silva, Chael Sonnen, you got Rampage Jackson, Tito Ortiz might be coming back potentially. You got Chuck Liddell talking about coming back potentially. Ryan Bader's over there for the light heavyweight championship. Rory McDonald. There's a lot of potential good matches for Vitor and Belfort, and they can pay him a truckload of money. If you have Vitor Belfort's ear, obviously we'll see how he feels after the fight against Uriah Hall, but all things considered, win or lose, as long as he doesn't get seriously hurt or, you know, brutally knocked out, would you advise him maybe to seek greener pastures elsewhere? Or, Vitor, you're 40, it's 20 years, that's it.
No, I think we've seen it time and time again, and that's basically what Bellator's light heavyweight division is. It's just a lot of these guys who just are not quite ready to hang it up, but they're not really competing in the UFC, so why not try to seek basically an extension to your career in Bellator? And I think these guys are doing really good over there. They're basically the marquee matchups that are being built up in Bellator, and I think a guy like Vitor Belfort, who's not, I mean, as I said earlier, he's basically the second fight in a fight night on FS1, whereas in Bellator, he'd probably be more of a marquee matchup. He'd definitely be on the poster. They could market him, I think, a little bit better than the UFC, who has, you know, an extreme riches of talent in the both the middleweight and light heavyweight divisions, whereas Bellator has to kind of make do with what they have. And, you know, when they have a name, a big name like Vitor Belfort, maybe they don't have the you know, the highlights or the library that he made it for himself in the UFC. But I think the fans are going to recognize the name Vitor Belfort for ages and ages to come. And I, as you said, he's been in the UFC for 20 years now. So I think this would be very unceremoniously for Vitor to just hang it up. I really do think that he is looking past maybe this fight and just looking to see what he can possibly muster after this, hopefully outside of the UFC, in my opinion. I think that's where he would be best suited.
I certainly believe that it would be wise, if he wants to continue to fight, to go ahead and step outside the UFC. He does have a victory this past summer over Nate Marquardt. Not the most impressive, because he started training with Farhad Zahabi. But if you look before that, he had a no contest loss against Kelvin Gastelum. Two losses before that against Gegard Mousasi and Jacare. And those two losses, he really, and I mean really, just looked like he did not have it anymore. He does have a victory over two victories over Dan Anderson and a loss in between those victories to Chris Weidman. Where, again, Vitor is one of these fighters where when he loses, he looks like he's done. He's not one of these guys to where he loses these all-out brawls and just gets caught, or it's a highly contested decision and, you know, just didn't go his way. When Vitor loses a fight, he really looks like, yeah, this might be it for him. But when he wins, outside the Nate Marquardt victory, it's in spectacular fashion. Whether it's a knockout or TKO, I mean, Vitor's one of these guys to where he goes for the home run, or he strikes out. Or as they said about Ricky Bobby and Talladega Nights, he either goes for the win or he crashes trying to go for it. And that's what Vitor Belfort is. I would love to see him step into the Bellator cage, because not just can he fight some of the fighters I mentioned earlier, but then you also figure with Bellator kickboxing, maybe he could take on guys like what's the American fighter's name that's over there right now in a Bellator kickboxing that trains with the Diaz brothers? Joe Schmidt?
Oh, I know. Yeah. Jeez. I know who you're talking about. I forgot his name.
I think it's Joe
Schilling. Joe Schilling.
That's right. Joe Schilling. I apologize, Schilling. I apologize. Please don't elbow, not knock me out next time we meet. But you got him. You got Melvin Manhoff. You got other fighters. So there's plenty of options for him to do, not just MMA, but kickboxing as well. And given his type of fighting style, that would be very friendly for him indeed. Now, speaking of friendly.
Yeah, well, just one more thing. I mean, I think to be a little bit fair to Vitor Belfort, I mean, his last few losses have been to basically the top of the top of the 185 division. We're talking Jacare Souza, Chris Weidman, Gegard Mousasi, who, if he hadn't gone to Bellator, he basically would have contended for a title in the UFC, and obviously the loss to Kelvin Gastelum that got overturned. Gastelum basically carving out a name for himself at 185 as well. So I think what we're seeing in Vitor is not necessarily we're certainly seeing a decline in Vitor Belfort, where he's not an elite fighter anymore. I mean, he's obviously an aging fighter, but certainly a fighter that can have fun fights. I mean, basically, that's what Anderson Silva has turned into. Anderson is not necessarily going to be contending for a title anytime soon, not giving his suspension. But it's just the game is basically passing behind, but that doesn't mean that you can't get creative with these guys and put them in fun fights. And I think Bellator is the godfathers of getting creative with big name fighters. And I mean, they're finding relative success with that. So I think it would be a perfect home for Vitor Belfort in Bellator.
Now, we are spending all this time talking about Vitor Belfort, and that's only because, you know, he's been around for 20 years. He's a former champion.
He deserves it.
Exactly. He's fought the who's who. Again, I know we could talk a lot about some of his shady past, the different looks of his body transformation pre and post USADA. Hey, look, all I can say is he didn't do anything that the rules didn't say that he couldn't do. So out of all these fighters who are getting in trouble by USADA, Vitor's name hasn't come up now once. Now, granted, there is some controversy about maybe he got some exemptions at some point from USADA when he fought Weidman. But other than that, he hasn't popped out once. And then beforehand, he was taking everything that was legal. So say what you will, but he was abiding within the rules. But Uriah Hall is a very tough competitor, and he certainly has the skill set and capabilities of finishing Vitor Belfort. So this fight could go to distance, but I seriously think one of these fighters is going to be going to sleep in this particular matchup.
Yeah, certainly one of these guys is – I mean, both of these guys are looking for a quick finish. I don't think either one really wants a decision. I think Uriah Hall, especially, he doesn't really want to go to a decision against a guy who's basically 1 foot out the door in the UFC. And Vitor Belfort, if he is basically walking away from the UFC, he doesn't want that last fight in this banner to be a boring decision or anything like that. And just one last thing I want to say about Vitor is that basically, he was a product of his time in the late 90s where everybody was just taking everything under the sun. And as you said, there were no rules against it. And, you know, once the rules were implemented, then basically his body was unable to produce testosterone naturally. So he had to go on whatever he had to go on, which was still within the rules. And when the UFC finally cracked down and USADA came in, Vitor, he obliged by the rules. And he's never failed a drug test since USADA came in. So, I think it's kind of unfair to put Vitor in the same page as, you know, guys who knowingly cheat when I don't think that was necessarily the case for Vitor.
Now, certainly it is going to be an interesting matchup to see not only how it plays out, but what happens afterwards if indeed this is, in fact, Vitor's last fight in the octagon. Returning to the cage, we're going to have Paige VanZant taking on Jessica Rose Clark. This is a pretty interesting matchup. This is going to be the first women's flyweight match in UFC history. It's the new division. Now, they did just have the flyweight women's champion crowned. So I guess you could say that technically is the first one. But, I mean, that was from fighters from the show. This is the first one in the UFC with fighters on the roster and everything. That's what I mean. I should have worded it better. Paige VanZant come back. It's been well over a year. Like, her last fight was December of 2016, where she lost to Michelle Waterson. But Paige VanZant, you know, she's 7-3. She was with Team Alpha Male. She had a lot of hype behind her. Got derailed by Rose Namajunas, but she showed a lot of guts and heart in that. Suffered a pretty bad cut, and yet she still went almost the full distance with her before getting in, putting the submission via rear naked choke in the fifth round. She's got victories over Beck Rollins, Alex Chambers, Felice Herring, and Kaylin Curran. You know, her two losses are to the current strawweight champion, Nami Nunez, and to Michelle Waterson, who's a very high-level fighter herself. So, you know, Paige, she left Team Alpha Male. You know, she was on Dancing with the Stars. She's obviously got a very good brand, but she also takes her fighting very seriously. She's taking on a very tough and game Jessica Rose Clark. And like I'm pulling up here, Rose Clark, who's 8-4, on her record. I'm trying to pull it down here so I can get you guys proper stats here. She's riding a 2-fight win streak. She does have a victory over Beck Rollins as well in November of 2017. So she's fought most recently. So this is going to be an interesting matchup to see. Did the time off help Paige grow as a fighter? Is a new division maybe going to be more refreshing for someone like Paige to where, you know, she was trying to cut down to 115, maybe was draining herself a little bit too much? What do you think of this matchup right here of VanZant versus Rose Clark?
Yeah, certainly the weight difference is what's number one on my list of interest here. Both of these ladies last fought at 115, and I believe Jessica Rose Clark missed weight for her last fight. So I think both of these ladies are going to be a lot more comfortable at 125. And as you mentioned, Paige VanZant. I mean, she was like this star in the making for the UFC, and then she got a little bit derailed by Rose Namajunas, and then again by Michelle Waterson. But this is a fighter that the UFC has been trying to promote as best as they can, and they've been putting her on free cards. And she was on the Dancing with the Stars show, so I think a lot of people are interested in seeing what Paige VanZant has to prove for herself in the UFC. But I would like to see what she looks like at 125, because she has been complaining about having a lot of trouble cutting weight at 115. So maybe the new division is going to revitalize her career. And as far as Jessica Rose Clark, she's basically 1-0 in the UFC. She was a big revelation at the end of the year last year. And she does fight out of a syndicate here in Las Vegas. So that's something to keep your eye on. And I think it's a very interesting matchup. I don't necessarily think either fighter is necessarily at the top of the 125 division, although it is a brand new division. But I kind of have a hard time believing that either one is going to contend for a title anytime soon.
Yeah, maybe not contending for a title anytime soon. It is a new division, the flyweight division, you know, relatively new. So maybe, you know, maybe someone like Paige, if she could get a win or two, it's possible that she could be closer to there just for the sake of until more of the division starts filling out with other fighters. There's this one fighter at 135 named Valentina Shevchenko. I would suggest Paige and every other female better get their title shot before she gets there, because, that's going to be scary. But I'm very interested to see how this one comes about. Paige being off as long as she was, leaving Team Alpha Male, which, you know, it's no bitterness, no problems there as far as, we just weren't seeing eye to eye. She just felt that it would have been better for her as a person, as a fighter, to leave there. And with the time off, I'm very curious to see the improvements she's made in her game. She's a very skilled fighter, but she is still very young, early 20s. And like you said, because of her looks and because of her marketing, the UFC did kind of skyrocket her toward the top, kind of like they did with your boy Sage Northcutt. Granted, very talented, but 23 years old. You know, there's a reason why when John Jones won the title at his age, why everybody was so amazed and shocked, because you don't see young fighters at that age be that good. But I'm very interested to see how she does and being this long off, what adjustments she's made and improvements. But Jessica Rose Clark, she's a tough fighter. She is not going to lay down. And even though she doesn't have the same name recognition as Paige, she's not someone to be overlooked as far as saying, hey, this is a quote-unquote stepping stone for Paige. I certainly do not see it that way. This is going to be a good matchup here. Indeed, I know Paige was supposed to fight Jessica I before, but Paige ended up having to pull out of that one. Both fighters are on this card. I'm very surprised that they didn't try to put those two against each other. I really would like to have seen that matchup, but it is what it is. Paige is taking on Jessica Rose Clark. Also, in a welterweight match, as the first card on the main card on Fox Sports 1, this is going to be a nice one. We got Emil Weber Meek taking on Kamaru Usman. And look, besides the names, you're seeing two very exciting fighters right here, especially Usman. Usman is a terrorizer right now. He won the Ultimate Fighter season, Team American Top Team versus Team Black Zillions. He was a winner of that one. He's 11-1 with 6 knockouts, and he's undefeated in the UFC right now, riding a 6 fight win streak. His last fight was September of 2017 with a knockout over Sergio Moraes. This is a very, very exciting young man to watch here, and he's got all the confidence in the world. We've heard him talk about, hey, I want to go out there. I want to be the best. I want to be a champion. And then his opponent, Emil Meek, also a very exciting fighter, 9-2 with 7 knockouts. He's 1-0 in the UFC. His last fight was December of 2016, so he's been out for a year, but he's coming back, and, you know, he's got the beard, kind of got that Viking, old man, rugged look, but these are two fighters I think could potentially give us a fight of the night, or at least a finish of the night. What do you think of Usman versus Meek?
Absolutely. I think this is my fight of the night, in my opinion, and this is the fight basically I'm looking forward to the most. We unfortunately haven't seen much out of Emil Meek because I think he's had some visa issues, and they tried to book him twice in the U.S., and for whatever reason, his visa issues wouldn't let him in. But we finally get to see him a year later this is a very exciting prospect, and he's going against, man, talk about prospects right here. Kamaru Usman is one of those guys that nobody really wants to fight in the UFC welterweight division because he doesn't necessarily have that name recognition, but he has been terrorizing everybody in the welterweight division. So this is just an absolute hell of a barn burner right here, and I can't wait to see it. If Kamaru Usman wins, I mean, there's really no more ducking from any other fighters in the top 10. I think he basically solidifies himself as one of the top contenders, and I think the UFC basically really has a big star on their hands if Kamaru Usman can pull off the victory.
No, certainly. Usman is somebody who you look at, and like you said, doesn't necessarily have the name recognition, but he is somebody that has slowly been climbing up the division. He's ranked 10th right now in the welterweight division of the UFC, and he's somebody who you can say, if he gets a victory here, you could certainly look at matchups against guys like Neil Magny, Darren Till, Jorge Masvidal, although I believe they don't train at the same gym. But Daniel Maia and others to where, yeah, he could certainly be somebody that the UFC can promote going forward. And I want to pull this up because I want to be accurate. He is called the Nigerian Nightmare. So, being from Nigeria, that could be another reason why the UFC is hoping that he could possibly win, because that could be another market that they could try to branch off to. You got Francis Ngannou, you got Carl Usman. You're trying to get into, the African market as well. Hey, what better way to do it than to get guys who are natives of those countries? So it certainly is fun. But, hey, Meek is not somebody to be overlooked. Even though he's been out of action for a while, this is an exciting fighter. He's got knockout power as well. So this is going to be a fun and entertaining bout to look at on the opening of the main card. Now, they're in St. Louis, Missouri. And generally when the UFC goes to countries or states or cities that they don't generally go to on the regular, they try to fill it with a bunch of local fighters. And there's not many fighters in the UFC that are from St. Louis. One of them, though, being Michael Johnson. He'll be taking on Darren Elkins in the main event of the prelim card. Michael Johnson will be making his featherweight debut. He's dropped down from lightweight 155 to featherweight 145. So he's going to be making that. He's 17-12, 8 knockouts, 7 decisions. He's doing it after being 1-4 in his last fight on a 2-fight losing streak against Khabib Nurmagomedov and Justin Gaethje. So he's looking to find new life and greener pastures in a new division that is stacked. But he's taking on a tough, tough opponent in Darren Elkins, a 33-year-old. Is 23-5. He's got 8 knockouts, 12 decisions, 3 submissions. But he's riding right now a 5-5 win streak all in the UFC. Last year in 2017, he went 2-0. So it's not going to be an easy debut for Johnson, but it's certainly going to be an entertaining one. What do you make of Elkins and Johnson in the featherweight division?
Yeah, I kind of wish Johnson would have taken a little bit more of a longer layoff, especially coming off that war that he had against Justin Gaethje recently. And now he's cutting even more weight coming back, just 6 months later. I think I read a crazy stat that Michael Johnson has taken somewhere around 220 punches in his last 2 fights alone. And if you remember, obviously the war against Justin Gaethje and the one before that against at UFC 205 against Khabib Nurmagomedov, where basically Khabib was just riding on top of him the whole time and just ground and pounding him. So this is a guy who's just been taking a lot of damage over his last couple of fights, and I would have liked to see him take a longer layout. But I understand. I mean, you got to stay active if you want to make money. But I really do wish that he would have considered it, taking a bit of a longer layoff and not necessarily be cutting more weight, because I don't think that's really going to do him any favors. I think he is one of those perennial top 15 guys at 155, and he can certainly make a career for himself there. I don't necessarily think that he's going to achieve any championship status at 145 just by cutting a little bit more weight. So I don't necessarily agree with the career move by Michael Johnson, but he is an exciting fighter to watch. I do look forward to seeing his fights. And, he's going up against a guy who's, as you said, he's on a 5-fight winning streak. So maybe he can build some kind of momentum off a victory from a guy like that. But as I said, I think Michael Johnson should have probably taken a little bit longer of a layoff.
Yeah, we have talked about this before, me and you, Leo, about fighters moving weight divisions, especially when they decide to go down. You really want to try to do it early in your career where you're young, your body can react to it a little bit differently. And if you wait until you get older, especially in your 30s, it's just tougher and tougher and tougher. The UFC Hall of Famer BJ Penn just talked about he should have never moved down to 145. Could have told you that myself. But it's just so tough to try and move division. Now, I know earlier I said about Frank Yeager that if he loses, maybe he should move down to 135. And the only reason I say that is because Frankie is not even a big 145er. He does not cut that much weight to get to 45. So going to 35 would almost be like a regular fighter's weight cut training for anybody else normally. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Frankie walks around at about 158, 160 at the most. And that's like literally after Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's all combined. So he's not a big guy whatsoever. So that's why I say him moving down, I don't think will be a big issue. But Johnson has very good power. We've seen it before against Dustin Poirier. But to me, he's also another fighter to where he's got all the skills. It's the consistency that we do not see from Michael Johnson. I don't know what it is, but we saw it in the we saw it in the Nate Diaz fight. We saw it in the Justin Gaethje fight where he's showing you, yeah, I could hang with these guys. But it's just at some point in those fights, something happens. Nate Diaz with the taunting and the flipping of the hand and laughing at him, or Justin Gaethje just constantly pushing forward. Or, you know, I won't even bring up Khabib Nurmagomedov because let's be honest, that's, you know, that's what the Eagle does. But Johnson just cannot get through that wall of consistency in most of his fights. That's really what has stifled him. Maybe being in a new division where he could, quote unquote, be the bigger guy works. But as Anthony Pettis, how it was trying to cut down to 145, it didn't go so well for him. So hopefully Michael Johnson has done his weight cutting the right way. And you know what? I wish him all the best of luck in his new division. But Darren Elkins is certainly going to be somebody that welcomes him there, and it's not going to be easy. That is a tough, tough fighter to ask to come in and take on in your first bout at 145. Leo, I'm just going to skim through these real quick. If you want to talk about either one of these guys, please feel free to jump in. But you also got in a lightweight bout, James Krause versus Alex White. You got a welterweight matchup between Thiago Alves, returning the light welterweight, taking on Zach Cummings. You got another women's flyweight bout on here. This is going to be on the prelims card. You got Kalindra Ferreira taking on Jessica Eye. Jessica Eva Eye, that is, wink, wink. You also got Daniel Taylor, J.J. Aldridge. That's a local fight right there. And you got Kyung Ho Kong against Guido Canetti. I only wanted to say those two names just because I knew I was going to butcher them. But, you know, this is a pretty decent card. Not star-studded, but it certainly has some recognizable names on there. And, Leo, I want to ask you this. You know, we talked about what the UFC needs in 2018. And we're seeing a card like this. Does the UFC need to try to save their big-name stars for pay-per-views and maybe let their fight night cards, regardless of where they may be, kind of let the middle of the pack type fighters go there? And like, instead of trying to put Tyrone Woodley on here or more big names, say, hey, it's on Fox, we'll put some good names on there, but we're going to save our top contenders and our champions strictly for pay-per-views this year because we want to get more money that way. Do you think that would be a smart move for the UFC to do, or was this just bad timing as far as injuries and guys already being scheduled for fights?
No, I mean, I think we're kind of being a little bit unfair with the card. I think it's a pretty decent card, and especially, I mean, we're just starting the year with a card like this, and then we have a big pay-per-view a week after that. So it's not necessarily a bad card, but as you said, it's basically a middle-of-the-pack fighter type of card where, you know, maybe one or two of these fighters can earn a title shot with a victory, but they're not necessarily, you know, out there knocking on the door of title contention. So I think it's a fair card to put on FS1. And actually, you know, if we're talking about stacking cards, I think you do want to put a little bit of a better product on Fox Sports, especially because we're talking about a contract year for the UFC and Fox. And if they do want to get that $400 million contract that they're allegedly seeking, I think they do want to make those cards a little bit stronger. But I think it just goes back to what we've been talking about for the last few years, is that they're just having too many shows and too many weeks with UFC. I remember, you know, 10 years ago when it was basically just the numbered cards, right? It was just the pay-per-views, and it was once a month. And, man, that month-long without a UFC card would just build up so much anxiety and so much, you know, you were just salivating to see a UFC event that by the time it came, it was just, you know, just such a huge event. And they did stack the cards back then. And I think we're just seeing a more watered-down product all the way across. And I do want to see better and bigger pay-per-views, but I do understand that if they do want to make that big contract on Fox, they kind of have to spread it out a little bit. And I think that's just what we're seeing. And unfortunately, prepare to see a little bit more of that in 2018 when the contract's about to expire.
No, I mean, again, I don't want to make it seem like I'm not going to call it as being one of the worst. I'm just saying, you know, the UFC doesn't go to St. Louis all that often, and you would just think going there when you have a champion from St. Louis, again, the injuries, you can't predict that. That's just the nature of the beast sometimes. But I just looked at it and said, I wonder if that's what UFC wants to try and start doing going forward and just say, hey, our Fox Sports card, we're kind of like, okay, I used to think of this as maybe one way the UFC could kind of do their shows. Their Fight Pass cards, they should save that for the up-and-comers and the locals. Wherever they're at, get your local fighters on there and get your up-and-comers. Hey, I got young prospects. I'm going to put them on Fight Pass. When you go to Fox Sports, I'm going to put my veterans, who everybody knows, but they're probably not going to be in title contention anytime soon, i.e. a Vitor Belfort, a Shogun Hua, somebody like that, to where it still brings name recognition. And I'm also going to put my middle-of-the-pack guys who, you know, bottom ranked sixth and lower, you know, 15 to 7. I'm going to put those guys on there. And then my pay-per-views, I'm going to put champions, number one contenders, and top five competitors. That's how I was looking at maybe that's how the UFC should structure their cards. That way, when you're looking at the Fight Pass cards, it's on Fight Pass, but you also know, okay, these could potentially be the stars of tomorrow. Then you're looking at the Fox Sports as saying, okay, these are guys who might be able to do something, but probably not. But these are also guys that I remember watching yesterday, but I could still see them, and I don't have to pay so much. But then the pay-per-view is like I'm seeing the best of the best from each division. So even if my favorite fighter isn't fighting on this card, I know I'm still getting high-level competition. That's how I thought the UFC might try to do their cards going forward. If that happens, we'll see in due time. But Leo, I wanted to poach you with this as we're getting ready to wrap up the show here. Chris Cyborg just defended her title against Holly Holm at UFC 219. Very good fight, very entertaining, very competitive. Now, the UFC has offered a super fight, champion versus champion. Amanda Nunes, the UFC's bantamweight champion, taking on Chris Cyborg, UFC's featherweight champion. It will be the first time that two females from Brazil are champions. In fact, they're the only two Brazilian female champions in the UFC history facing each other. First time in the female divisions, a champion versus champion. And given their skill set, it will lead to some tremendous bombs being thrown. Amanda Nunes, who at one point kind of didn't sound interested in fighting Cyborg, says she's willing to do it and says, hey, that seemed like a logical fight. Cyborg, on the other hand, who's been wanting all these fights, now says she's not interested in Amanda Nunes. No offense against her, but she's tired of fighting bantamweights, women who fight at 135 and they move up. She wants to fight true featherweights to try to open up the division for more women out there who are fighting. We're talking about Megan Anderson, and we're talking about several others outside of the UFC that she would like to bring in there to show, hey, not only am I coming here and you guys built the division for me, but I want to be able to open it up for other people because that's going to help my legacy that I was a pioneer, same way Ronda Rousey was, in showing that, hey, this division has plenty of talent in it. They just need an opportunity. What do you make of the quote-unquote saga of Cyborg, Nunes, maybe, maybe not? What are your thoughts on this matter?
Well, I absolutely agree with Chris Cyborg. I think she should want to fight the, you know, natural 145-pounders, and I think the matchup to really make is against Megan Anderson, the current champion at Invicta. Unfortunately, due to visa issues, that really hasn't been the case over the last year, and I think, you know, it's been really delayed over the course of Cyborg's run at UFC as a featherweight. And I mean, I can understand making that big money matchup or the super fight, if you will, if Cyborg has basically run out of opponents, but we do have a very credible 145-pounder in Megan Anderson. Now, if and when Chris Cyborg does defend against Megan Anderson, I can certainly understand that that super fight, and you know, there really isn't much else for Cyborg to do after that. But I think we are jumping the gun a little bit, and I think the UFC is just getting a little bit ahead of themselves, and it just goes to show to that that WEIMG mentality that now it's all about the money fights and not necessarily about rankings or you know the merit of who should really be contending next. And I think that's a mistake, and it's a little bit short-sighted. Now, if Amanda Nunes were to win that title, what does that do to her 135-pound title? That just kind of stagnates the division, and it causes another Conor McGregor problem. So I don't think that's the right move at this point, but it sounds like it's more than likely that the next move that the UFC is going to make, because Dana White did an interview recently where he said that that's really what he's gunning for. Now, maybe he's kind of using that fight as a bargaining chip to get Megan Anderson to agree to a fight, but something tells me that they are actually going to follow through with that fight, which I think is not the correct move.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand where Cyborg is coming from, and I do get it. You know, you kind of don't want to feel like you're only taking on women who aren't in your division, and you don't want it to be like, oh, well, that's cool, but she never fought anybody who was a real 45. You know, it'll be like the heavyweight champion only fighting light heavyweights and big middleweights. It's like, yeah, that's cool, but you ain't fought a real heavyweight. So I do get where she's coming from. But what I also don't understand is, you know, she wants these big fights, and she does want, you know, to be in, you know, big money fights and show people how great she is. Right now, there's not that many options at 145 that the UFC is willing to bring in. Now, granted, you did open up the division. You did have Cyborg come over. Why not go out there and start plucking away at some of these other 45ers there? Are they, you know, a former Olympic gold medalist in another sport? Are they all-American wrestlers? Maybe not, but still, you don't want a division with one true featherweight and then a bunch of blown-up bantamweights moving up as well. So, I do like the matchup, though, and I would love to see Nunes versus Cyborg. I think that would be a tremendous storyline going forward. And like I said, with their skill sets, we will certainly see some heavy bombs being thrown from both ladies. So it will be fun. We'll dive into this this news more as the year goes on, but it is certainly one to keep an eye on. Leo, the last thing right before we wrap up real quick. This whole Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor coming back, not coming back, Conor McGregor fighting Manny Pacquiao, Conor McGregor fighting Tony Ferguson, fighting Khabib Nurmagomedov. It's all a big drama. Khabib posted something on Twitter that says, hey, big news coming. The Eagle continues to hunt. There's rumors that Tony Ferguson and Khabib might be set to fight each other in April for a card. In your quick thoughts, if the UFC does this, is this going to be for the interim title or is it going to be for the legit title because the UFC stripped Conor McGregor because he's not willing to come back and defend? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think we touched a little bit on this last week, and my thoughts on it are basically if Tony Ferguson is going to be forced to defend the interim title, then basically that should become the official title and you should strip Conor McGregor because at this point, Conor's been champion for over a year, has been healthy, and has not had any interest in defending it or hasn't had any interest in announcing any kind of opponent. So I think the fair thing to do would be to strip Conor McGregor and have Tony and Khabib fight for the linear title. But I don't think the UFC is going to do that just yet. I think they're going to give Conor McGregor every chance possible to defend the title because it is big money at the end of the day. Conor McGregor being champion is big money for the UFC, and they want to keep him being champion for as long as possible. But I think Dana White did an interview recently where he was very adamant about you know that they are having that option on their table, and if Conor doesn't show any interest in defending the belt, then they are going to have to make a decision on that. So I think they are giving Conor the most opportunities possible, but sooner or later they're going to have to make a decision, and I think stripping of the title wouldn't be far-fetched.
It is going to be something to keep an eye on. Obviously, either matchup would be tremendous, and like you said, it would be smart to keep the belt on Conor as long as you can. But With, you know, with that $100 million in the bank, it is going to be interesting to see if he decides to come back or not. But Khabib versus Tony, I think, is the first matchup to make, just because that's the match we've been waiting so long to go for. And then you have a true number one contender, and the winner, if barring any injuries, could fight Conor McGregor this summer, International Fight Week, and we could be there live in Las Vegas to watch it. Leo, I know you got to get ready, man. So once again, I want to say thank you for coming on. Great stuff as always. And guys, show's a little short this week, but next week, remember, Monday, we're still going to get the time down. It's 3 or 3:30. We still got to figure that out, but we're going to start doing our shows on Monday so you can get us at the beginning of the week. So next time, fight fans, enjoy the fights this weekend. Leo, I'll see you at the Palms. Till next week, everybody. Peace.
I am smoking on exotic. My girl ain't got no stomach. Every time we have sex, she always asks me for a honor. I ask her, is she working? She asks me, do I want it? I say, when I went to school, bitch, money was a subject.
I'm riding around, I'm getting it. I'm riding around, I'm getting it. I'm riding around, I'm getting it. It's mine, I spend it. I'm riding around, I'm getting it. I'm riding around, I'm getting it. I'm riding around, I'm getting it.